Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now, on Last Call, breaking developments on the AI front, a major cross-border deal just announced. Call it the Meme Massacre. Some high-flying favorites are plummeting back to earth, including a stock controlled by one Donald J. Trump. Minimum wage going supersized. Fast food companies scrambling as $20 an hour arrives in California. One owner joins us on what he's going to do next. A target on Tesla's back. Why the stakes just spiked ahead of critical numbers tomorrow. Plus, the top moneymaker outside of crypto over the past decade. It's got nothing to do with stocks. Trust us, you'll be surprised. And it's Make It Mondays. It's also Monday. We're going to meet the entrepreneur who put it all on the line to bet on goats. All that and more over the hour. So belly up, buckle up, because Last Call is up right now. Well, good evening here. Good afternoon to everybody out west. I'm Brian Sullivan. It is good to be back. We have all that and more coming up on our hour. But first up on Last Call, not a great day for your money. The Dow and the S&P retreated. Yeah, off all-time highs. The Nasdaq did sort of eke out a small gain. But you had hotter than expected economic data sending stocks down a bit because as that data came out, interest rates moved higher. In fact, the yield on the 10-year is hovering near its highest level of the year. So if you thought borrowing costs were going to go down, think again. And as a result of the strong economy, the Federal Reserve may need to maybe recalibrate how many interest rate cuts, if any, it plans to make. You see, Fed officials have six more Fed meetings this year and really just kind of four cracks at it changing their rate policy ahead of the presidential election. Maybe they don't want to do it too close. So how many rate cuts do all of you smart people out there watching and listening expect to see this year? Well, we wanted to find out. And since we couldn't call you up individually, we did a poll on X earlier today. Your options were, one, no rate cut at all this year. Two, one or two cuts this year. Or three or four cuts this year. And here are, I think, the rather surprising results. Those are not the results. Those are the probabilities. In the results, more than half of you believe the Federal Reserve will make just one or two rate cuts this year. A third of you were more pessimistic. And fewer than 10% of you say that we will see 3 to 4 cuts, which is fascinating because much of Wall Street is calling for at least 3 cuts this year. So many of all of you are kind of going against Wall Street's consensus. We kind of bet that you may be more correct than many million-dollar strategists. Here's why. Inflation, it has been running a little bit hot again. Prices for many things continue to go up. We don't have to tell you that. So does that keep the Federal Reserve a lot more dovish, meaning not cutting rates until things change? And what could it mean for the markets and your money? Well, let's find out and talk about it with our lead-off market panel tonight. Joining us, Crossmark Global Investments Chief Market Strategist Victoria Fernandez and Clio Capital Managing Partner Sarah Kuntz. Victoria and Sarah, welcome back. Good to see you. Kicking off the show, kicking off the month, and kicking off the quarter. Sarah, what do you think? Do you think the Federal Reserve may surprise us with fewer or no rate cuts this year?
I suspect we're going to get a cut, if only because I think that people are very, very restless, for one. But, you know, we see that number of, hey, the Fed's still saying 3. The reality is that a lot of the governors are saying it could be 2, it could be none. It's just that, you know, when you add them all up, you still have more indicating 3 than not. But that is a slim majority. And we know in this country, those do not always hold. So I think we will have a rate cut. I suspect we'll get one in December. I think we'll get one in the summer. That September one is so tricky in election year, though, because if they do that, that gives a pretty big advantage to the sitting president. And for the most part, those kinds of agencies try to stay a little bit out of that kind of political stuff.
Okay, Victoria, what do you think? Do you have a rate? I know you've been a little more hawkish and maybe more correct on this side of it, on the inflation side of it. Do you think we will get rate cuts this year? And if so, how would you have bet in our or voted in our poll?
Yeah, Brian, I think you've got some really smart people watching the show, because I agree that I think we're going to get less than what the market has already priced in. They're pricing in 3 rate cuts right now, and I just don't think that that's going to happen. I do agree with Sarah that we'll probably get at least 1 cut this year, but I think it's going to be at the end of the year, not just because of the election, but because of what we're seeing with inflation. The last thing the Fed wants to do is cut rates, increase demand at a time when manufacturing is just starting to turn around, because we know that's just going to lead to more inflation pressure. And we're seeing it go up, not just in the CPI and the PPI reports that came out, but you look at that PCE report on Friday, the Fed's favorite gauge of inflation, that super core number, the one they like to look at, was actually up 3.8% over the last 6 months on an annual rate. That's much higher than where they want to be. So I think they're going to hold for a while.
Hold for a while. Victoria, I'll go back to you. If that's the case, if you are right, what would that mean for equity markets? Because to Sarah's point, we'll go back to a term I think I coined in 2011, hopium. The markets are hoping and wanting and maybe demanding some rate cuts.
They really are. So are we? Will we see some kind of a pullback? We probably will. And we should, Brian, we should see some kind of pullback this year. Look, we have had no more than a 2% drawdown from October of last year when we hit those lows. And we're up, what, almost 30% since then. So we're due to have some consolidation, to have some pullback. I wouldn't be surprised if the Fed becomes more hawkish that the market will react a little bit. But for right now, the market continues to hit new highs. I know we were down a little bit today, but you've got an S&P that's 13% above its 40-day moving average. Things don't stay in that realm for very long. So I think the market will continue to turn until there's a better path forward that they see from the Fed, and we'll see some volatility if they become more hawkish.
Yeah, Sarah, I do wonder if the trends from January and February with the data that we've got on inflation continue, maybe they go up. If inflation expectations start to, you know, return higher like they did in 1980, would that change your macro view on how stocks do? We got Dow futures down 100 points, again, coming off an all-time high. I don't want to make too much of it, but you do wonder about this market.
I think you do. You know, I wasn't born yet in 1980, but I think that
bragging,
some of those...
That's bragging. You're just bragging at this point. I was driving almost.
I'm not going to listen to that.
Don't look like it. No, but, you know, I think the reality is that, yeah, this is going to be an interesting summer for inflation. We have now, you know, the tragedy in Baltimore that closed port is going to put price pressures on. And I think that we're going to see that all over the place in the stock market. I don't think that port closed is great for automakers, but some of those higher prices that come out of it could be good for some other parts of the market. And so I think that I don't think that we're going to see inflation slow down a ton going into summer. I think if anything, we're going to see it speed up and we're going to see the market reacting kind. We see what gold's doing right now. Bitcoin, there's a lot of money still that's jumping in no matter where the inflation sits.
Yeah. And we'll let you guys go. And I know that Baltimore doesn't get a lot of attention, but that's the number one automobile import port in the United States, now out of commission for a long period of time. And you wonder, will that jack back up the auto inflation numbers that we finally saw coming down? Time will tell. Victoria and Sarah Kunst, not born in 1980. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Doesn't sound like that long ago. All right, you've got the macro numbers for the market. Let's show you what happened inside the markets. Your stud and dud du jour inside the S&P, the big winner of the day, 3M, are spinning off their healthcare unit. The big decliner, Walgreens, the drugstore chain, falling almost 10%. Saying the economy is, quote, challenging to its business. Walgreens stock. I mean, how low can this thing go? That may be worth a bigger story on its own. All right, we are just getting started here on Last Call and On Deck. Why some of the big health insurers are taking a big hit right now and maybe dragging down stock futures. Plus, a major cross-border deal on artificial intelligence just announced. We will have the breaking developments out of D.C. And what goes up must... Well, you probably know the rest. A stratospheric rise turning into a tough run today for the meme stocks But is it actually good news? That's coming up.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
All right, let's get to tomorrow's news tonight. Some of the headlines and stories you and Wall Street will be talking about tomorrow morning. First up, PVH. You may not know the company, but you know their brands. They own Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, and more. That stock getting hit right now. The company reporting fourth quarter earnings and offering bleak guidance for the upcoming year. They expect sales to decrease 11% year over year and fall 6-7% over next year. Ugh. PVH is down 21% right now. Those losses weighing on stock futures at this hour. Next up, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, announcing a 3.7% revenue increase for Medicare Advantage plans for 2025. Now, that decision is in line with the government's initial proposal, but that is below Wall Street expectations for how much the payout must go out. And so, in fact, that it's going up less than expected is sending Humana, UnitedHealth, CVS Health, and more down, some pretty big right now. And finally, a bad blow for activist hedge fund Trian and Blackwell's Capital in their push for Disney board seats. Mutual firm and massive Disney stakeholder T. Rowe Price telling Reuters it is backing the current Disney directors whose positions are being challenged. Disney shares relatively unchanged after hours. All right, in the meantime, a big deal around artificial intelligence, literally. Breaking news on the U.S. and U.K. making a first-of-its-kind AI safety alliance. CNBC's Eamon Javers has the breaking details and joins us now. Eamon.
Yeah, that's right, Brian. This sets up cooperation between experts in both countries tasked with ensuring safety of the cutting-edge technology of AI. The agreement now creates an alliance between the U.S. and U.K. safety institutes and seeks to build a shared approach to testing of AI. The AI Safety Institute in the United States was established back in February. It operates under the auspices of the U.S. Department of Commerce, and it is overseen by a consortium of more than 200 organizations, ranging from AI giants like OpenAI and Apple to nonprofits and universities, including Princeton, Purdue, Cornell, and others. Now, the UK's Secretary of State for Science, Michelle Donnellan, told me earlier today that the goal of this new effort is to create a center of gravity around AI safety research globally.
We see many of America's leading companies base themselves for their international headquarters in the UK, like Anthropic and OpenAI. But we also need to be gripping the risks so that the general public will recognize that it is safe to utilize artificial intelligence, and so that we can assure ourselves that we can truly go down this road in a safe and responsible way.
Donnellan says the key is to not leave safety testing entirely up to the private sector and for government to play a role testing models and doing what she calls third-party checks. Brian, back over to you.
All right, so we got UK, US, and I'm going to ask you to editorialize or even guess, Eamon, because I know you can do it as well or better than anybody. I would imagine this could be a model for other things, right? I mean, the EU, everybody else. I mean, AI is not a US thing. This is going to be a global issue that needs a lot of fairly urgent attention.
Yeah, that's right. And Donnellan told me that they do hope to have more people involved, more nations involved in this framework as they go along. This is just the very beginning. early stages of it. And of course, when the UK held their AI safety summit at Bletchley Park last year, that was sort of a one of those iconic moments in AI safety. They invited the Chinese government. The Chinese did send representatives. There was some blowback around that. But the UK officials said, you know, it was important to have the Chinese in on this AI safety conversation because without them, it really doesn't work globally. So some nascent efforts here at sort of global regulation or at least global safety monitoring, Brian.
I'm sure Xi Jinping will get right on that. Eamon Javers, thank you very much from D.C. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, in the meantime, there was a bit of a meme stock massacre on Wall Street. Trump media tanking. Company reporting a net loss of $58 million last year. They had just actually a couple of million bucks in sales. But it wasn't just them. Investors in AMC, Reddit, GameStop, and more also got whacked today. Which kind of brings up an interesting question. Are these wild swings in meme stocks, not just today, but going back months and years, are they a good or bad thing for retail investors? We know it sounds weird, right? Nobody wants to lose money. Up good, down bad, unless you're short. But I think there can also be lessons in losses. Let's talk about it with the godfather of retail options trading. That is Tom Sosnoff, founder and CEO of brokerage firm Tasty Trade. Tom, don't want anybody to lose money. But the point is, especially for the noobs out there, newbies to the game, there are powerful lessons in understanding not only, you know, taking losses, they hurt, but minimizing and mitigating risk.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the whole meme stock going back to 21 and what we've seen lately, Brian, is just, you know, I mean, I know people are going to say, you know, losses are bad and this and that and jumping on, you know, these hype stocks is bad. But the reality of it is if it engages people in the markets and it gets people to be self-directed and manage their own money and make decisions and learn how to be strategic and learn how to be smarter investors, I think that there's no downside to it.
Well, we just called you the godfather of retail options trading. So godfather, I can't do the accent. Help us out. You come to me now. Give us some lessons, basic things that your audience, our audience could and should be doing if they're going to play in that game. And it is a game.
No question, it is a game. And you know what? This is a game. The most important thing is, first of all, you got to realize that some stocks like AMC and like GameStop, I mean, they're kind of old news. And I'd probably stay away from both of those. If you're hoping for some kind of crazy upside explosion or some, you know, some cheap upside calls or something, I don't like it. I don't like either of those plays. But if you're interested in DJT or you're interested in Reddit, those are both interesting plays with some pretty wild, you know, there's tons of liquidity, 18 million shares, I think, traded of DJT today, 13 or 14 million shares of Reddit. And they have very deep, relatively liquid option markets in Reddit, okay option markets in DJT. But if you're a strategist and you want to enter a game with high volatility, and in one case, DJT with a lot of interesting put skew, and the other case, Reddit with a lot of interesting call skew, meaning just the velocity of risk is on one stock to the upside, the other stock to the downside, those are both really cool plays.
Okay, you said put skew, so I'm assuming the bias on DJT, the Trump social, Trump media, is to the downside, or...
Yes.
Are those puts being bought as hedges against long equity positions? Is there any way to know what the net bet might be, Tom?
Well, the net bet, as far as velocity of risk, is definitely the downside in DJT. I mean, it's one of the only stocks we've ever seen that has, like, what I would call a single point of failure. And so that's not, you know, I don't think we've ever seen an underlying like that. It's being priced right now in the next 80 days with almost $30 of downside, and it's only a $47 stock.
Wow.
So I think that is, you know, now it has upside too, but I think that the upside is very measured. The puts are about three times more expensive than the calls. And if you flip the cards over, Brian, and look at Reddit, that has asymmetric opportunity to the upside. The calls are twice as expensive as the puts. See, the marketplace has this really interesting way of kind of normalizing velocity of risk. It does that through option pricing. And I think in both cases, it makes for really interesting, you know, for a strategist, for a really interesting play.
I think the online folks would say we're going to timestamp this because that is an awful lot of potential downside in DJT. Tom Sosnoff, as always, love it, laying it out in a way that we can all understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, coming up, supersize this minimum wage hikes from one coast to the other. Will you get stuck with the tab, or are people just wildly overreacting as people tend to do? We'll talk to a restaurant owner in California about it next.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Our delivery brokers have consistently delivered for us, and today we are delivering for them. We depend on our app delivery workers to deliver our food 24/7. Now, delivery workers who work for Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub will receive at least $19.56 per hour.
That was New York City Mayor Eric Adams announcing a minimum pay increase for app-based delivery workers in New York City. Will now make just under $20 an hour before tips, so everybody should be tipping. They'll make more than that. All this comes as California enacts their new $20 minimum wage for fast food workers beginning today. Some hailing the move as a big win for the workers, making more money. Others worried about jobs. Kate Rogers joining us now with more. She covers restaurants for us here at CNBC. Kate, what are you hearing about how this new law may impact actual business?
We're hearing a lot, Brian. So this minimum will be among the highest in the nation and also the sector's highest as of today, with ripple effects sure to be felt for all parties involved in varying ways. So the law targets, of course, fast food chains with 60 plus locations nationwide and will impact more than 500,000 workers in the sector, Governor Gavin Newsom said in the fall. Now, there are exemptions for bakeries who bake bread on site, restaurants and airports, museums, hotels and event centers. I sat down exclusively with Mary Kay Henry, who is the SEIU president, who said the focus was on fast food because workers were inspired to take action in the wake of the pandemic.
It's taken us 10 years to get to this table, and they feel like they're going to have a voice on the job that they've never been able to experience before.
Now, business advocates say this will have unintended consequences for workers and businesses alike. The International Franchise Association telling CNBC, quote, these are small businesses and they're facing now mandated higher costs. And those costs are going to get passed on to the customer and will likely result in fewer jobs. Now, the hike may also lift wages for low-wage workers who are outside of the restaurant sector. Owners like Jennifer B. Perez of Growing Roots, which is a plant design and maintenance company in Long Beach, California, say they're closely monitoring the increase in order to remain competitive.
It's a ripple effect because I'm not part of that industry, but of course I'm actually looking at all of that as well. Because like I said, I've always haven't worried about it too much because I was like, oh, I'm always over minimum wage. But since that keeps increasing and increasing, and like that's a 25% increase from 16 to 20.
Now, her lowest paid worker is at $19 an hour, and she has to be wary, she says, of further price increases for her customers too, Brian. So these small business owners are certainly juggling a lot of different things here. Back over to you.
Yes, they are. We'll see how it plays out. Kate Rogers staying on the story. Thank you. All right, joining us now is Alex Johnson. He owns 10 restaurants in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's the CEO of Pretzel Power, Inc. They operate Cinnabon and Auntie Anne's franchises. Alex, thanks for joining us. I understand from your side of the business, people are going to say this is tough. We're going to have to raise prices. We get that, but is it something that you can sustain? Prices will go up, but like we've seen, you think customers will deal with it and they will still pay?
No, I'm not fairly certain. No, I don't think so. We saw that after the couple of times that we raised prices during after COVID, that our sales did go down, traffic counts did go down. I have a snack, a treat, an indulgence, pretzels, Cinnabons. It's not, you know, a big meal. And what we are is, you know, seeing is that people are making the trade-off and they're just saying, you know, it's simply too high. I myself, you know, I'm a consumer. I paid $13 for a smoothie the other day and it was like some crazy sticker shock for me. And I'm seeing it everywhere. And that's what my employees are telling me too.
So if you look at like a Cinnabons or an Auntie Anne's, both, by the way, delicious, you have a couple of workers there. Let's say, how many would you have at an average store? Four or five at a time?
At any one time, depending on the volume, about 3 to 7.
Okay, so call that 5. You're paying an extra 4, yeah. So you're an extra $20 an hour as a crew. Add that up. For a business like a Cinnabon or an Auntie Anne's, what will that mean for prices? Are you going up a nickel? or are you going up a buck for a pretzel?
Yeah, so actually, since 2019, we've increased the price of our original pretzel by $2 whole. That wasn't all at once. That was, of course, across 4 years, but small incremental changes during that time that resulted in the $2 increase.
You know, I talked to a friend of mine that owns a different quick service restaurant, as you would say, and we talked about jobs. This is last time there was a big minimum wage increase. It wasn't recently. And he said something interesting. He said, well, people think that my employees are going to make more money. He said, it's only partly true. He's like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give my best people more hours so they will make more money, and I'm going to cut hours or lay off the others. Is that kind of how it works? That for some people, your best workers, your best team members, they will make a lot more money, but others are going to suffer?
You know, in when the minimum wage has increased in the past, we've usually done raises across the board, or we've done them proportionately, right? So like for the management and above, those people who really are, you know, 40 hours a week, they have supervisory roles like shift leads. We've done that, but this one being as drastic as it is, we're not able to. So we're simply just anyone who's making less than 20, we're bringing up to 20, and we're not doing any more raises or bonuses in addition to that.
Does anybody, I know we got to go, I'm sorry. Does anybody talk to you? Like, does anybody from the government come up to you and say, hey, Alex, how's this going to, or is these just basically bureaucrats making these rules and nobody from business is being consulted?
You know, it feels like that sometimes. I'm just a small business, family owned. You know, we're Main Street. We're not Wall Street. So I hear it out. You know, there's a narrative out there that, oh, this is a $1 billion+ industry. They can absorb this cost, you know, no problem. It's not true. I'm a small, independently owned business. I am not the big brand name behind my locations, and it's going to hurt us a lot. And I really don't know about the future of our ability to run these businesses in California.
Yeah, well, that's tough. And, you know, they're making decisions in Sacramento. You think they might consult with mayors and towns like yours to say, how's this going to affect the people that actually live and work there? But it's California. Alex Johnson, good luck. Come on anytime.
Thank
let us know how things are going. Appreciate it. All right, coming
Thank
up.
Thank you very much.
Taking hits from all sides, can Tesla defy the naysayers with its big update tomorrow? Plus, outside of crypto, it is the past decade's best investment. Here's a hint. It is not stocks. It is way more delicious than that. Yeah, that's right. Got a bonus TNT for you. It's a significant development on Disney's proxy fight. Disney is currently winning shareholder vote count against Nelson Peltz's Trian Partners in its push to win seats on Disney's board. That, according to the Wall Street Journal, Disney has notably secured the backing of BlackRock, the second biggest shareholder. And as we mentioned earlier, it also just won the support of T. Rowe Price, obviously another major stockholder. Of course, this does not mean that Disney will ultimately win the vote. Voting will continue through Disney's annual meeting happening this Wednesday, but let's just say it's out of the gate well. Meantime, I'm back. So is the RBI. Today, let's get random but interesting on how people have been making money investing in the last 10 years, because you know the stock market has done well. But did you know it is not the best moneymaker over the last decade? Of course, outside of crypto, crypto's the winner. But outside of that, it's not the best moneymaker. We had no idea what it was until we saw this cool stat from Fundstrat taking data from a recent Knight Frank wealth report. Now, that report looked at a bunch of different kinds of investments, things like diamonds, cars, art, handbags, stocks, and even booze, and then calculated the percent change over the past 10 years. And what they found? Pretty darn fascinating. High-end furniture, jewelry, coins, they all did okay over 10 years. You made money, but they weren't great. Vintage and investable cars returned an average of 82% since 2013. Again, pretty good. Art, it actually doubled on average, 105% jump in a decade. Then you got really nice watches, the kind that Robert Frank wears, up 138% in 10 years. Some nice wine gave you 146% profit in a decade, assuming you didn't drink it, of course, which I would, so return would be zero. And then you got stocks. The S&P 500 posting a solid 158% return over the last 10 years. But that was not the best investment. That honor, my friends, goes to whiskey. That's right. Knight Frank found that investing in rare whiskey, on average, gave you a stunning 280% return over a decade, more than 100% more than stocks. Remarkable. But we do guess there's probably a big caveat to that, because my guess is you got to spend a lot to make a lot in the whiskey world. Example, one of the world's rarest whiskeys sold for $2.7 million at auction a few months ago. They say it takes money to make money. And I guess in the world of investing in booze, they're not kidding. But it certainly is random and profitable. You go, whiskey. All right, in the meantime, old Tesla, it cannot catch a break. Chinese competitor BYD revealing it sold just over 300,000 EVs in the first quarter, up 13% from last year. And now some analysts expect Tesla's first quarter deliveries to fall below last year's as competition ramps up. If that happens, it would mark Tesla's first year-over-year drop since the beginning of the pandemic. Tesla releases those numbers tomorrow morning. Now, of course, Tesla still dominates the American EV market. There's Teslas and then pretty much everything else. And BYD's vehicles are not available in the U.S., at least not yet. But two brands very much here in America are Hyundai and Kia. And Axios says both are aggressively moving to expand in the American EV market and beyond. So is Tesla at risk of losing market share to other competitors, or will they stay on top? Let's take it to a major Tesla investor. That is Gerber Kawasaki, president and CEO, Ross Gerber. Ross, okay, fair enough. Listen, the Hyundai Ioniq 6, which is the cheapest EV lease in the country, it's also a very weirdly shaped car, kind of looks like an upside down banana. That aside, the Ioniq 5, Hyundai, you see a little more of those. You're starting to see some EV Kias out there, but it's still Tesla's world to own. I know you've been critical of Tesla and Elon Musk. Do you think they can keep their significant market share lead?
Well, I think you're bringing up a really good point. A, these are cheaper vehicles than Tesla's, and certainly not as good a vehicle as Tesla. But when I'm watching March Madness, I'm seeing ads for these vehicles, and that will entertain consumers into looking at vehicles like the Kia and the Hyundai, and they're selling a lot of them. Their numbers are good any way you look at it. And a lot of people are looking for alternatives to Tesla because of Elon's behavior. And it's really unfortunate because Tesla is the best car out on the market. I just got a text from one of my coworkers who's trying full self-driving for the first time because it's free. And he just said, I just got all the way home in traffic to Manhattan Beach. This is amazing. And I was like, yeah, it's good software. But nobody's ever known this till the other day. And I've told them to do free trials. I've told them to do advertising. And so now this lack of effort to create demand is hurting them. And the competitors are taking share.
Yeah, and we've talked about that. And I've posted it and people come at me. I'm like, they need a PR department. People are like, they don't need a PR department. I'm like, well, they do, because you counter negative articles. That's what PR people primarily do, is they counter negative stuff or stuff that maybe is not true, that the writer gets wrong, and they can call up and say, you need to issue a correction. This is not true. Also, to your point, Ross, you know, listen, I get it. Elon's done things his own way, and he's the world's richest man, so he's done it right. But wouldn't it be awful probably to see a TV commercial for a Model 3 or a Model S with FSD? And I know a show, by the way, at 7 p.m. Eastern on CNBC, that would be happy to run it.
100%. Although, I think the target market for Tesla might be a different demo, but
our viewers probably already all own one. So
right, exactly. But you've got to get to the demo that really doesn't know anything about EVs. And I talk to people all the time, and they say, "Oh, the batteries give you cancer, or the range anxiety, or." Oh, I hear absurd things every time I ask somebody, why don't you have an EV? Like, why would you pay for gas at this point when there's so many EV options that are great? And so it's really just a lack of knowledge. And that's what the education on television can really do. If you put something out during March Madness, people see that, and they're effective ways to advertise. So they don't even have a CMO. I don't even know who's running ads at Tesla, and they certainly don't have any cohesive strategy.
You know, we'll let you go, Ross. Apropos of Zero, I watched a documentary called Ford versus Holden, not Ford versus Ferrari. It's about the car battle. This is the kind of geek I am on cars a couple days ago. And they showed ads for the 70s and 80s TV ads for cars. They were there's like people like smoking in their Pinto. And they're like, I'm just thinking like a couple cool Tesla ads would not be the worst thing in the world. The Holden Commodore, a class of its own. Ross Gerber.
And a lot of a lot of people are making great Tesla ads online, too. If they just played those, they would do well.
There you go. And pay some royalties. Ross Gerber, thank you very much. All right. Ford versus Holden. I'm not joking. All right. Coming up, the surprise new trend from Americans young and old that may be very, very good news. Mike Rowe, of Dirty Jobs fame and a great charity donator, is back with more on this story coming up. All right, welcome back. Here's something very surprising and probably some good news. Yeah, good news. More and more of America's youngest workers are ditching college and going to trade school instead. The number of students enrolled in vocational community colleges rose 16% from last year, while enrollment at traditional four-year colleges basically stayed flat. With us tonight for more is Mike Rowe Works Foundation CEO, Mike Rowe. Mike, thanks for joining us again. Love your view on this. Here's the reality. I think this is an insane positive for not only America, but for these people, because they're going to have a career and make a lot of money for the rest of their lives.
Well, thank you. It's great to hear that. It's probably a little premature for a victory lap, but I was just telling your producer, you know, I've spent 16 years in this space trying to make a more persuasive case for the 10 million jobs that are currently open, most of which don't require a four-year degree. Your last segment was really instructive, you know, talking about the importance of PR and the power of good PR. You know, I don't care if you're running Tesla or a, you know, supermarket down the road, it does matter. And when you talk about changing attitudes, and when you talk about challenging stigmas and stereotypes and myths and misperceptions that keep people from pursuing a career in the trades, you've got to see charts like this. You have to make a more persuasive case for the simple fact that a four-year degree is not the best path for the most people, and that opportunity, by and large, often resembles these vocations that do, in fact, look a lot like work.
Your point about victory lap, well taken as usual, Mike. I mean, you got to have a work ethic, right? There's got to be other things other than just having this skill. But as any of our viewers or listeners knows, especially if you live in an urban area like New Jersey or New York or someplace like this, if it's a non-emergency plumbing call or electrical call, I don't know about you. For me, it's weeks of wait. The waiting list is weeks. And the fees are high, and I just think this has to be viewed, at least right now, as a net positive.
Well, look, this is why it's dangerous to paint with too broad a brush. You know, you've got a national audience, and many people watching probably have kids who would, in fact, be served, well served, by a university experience, assuming they can afford it. But so many others can't. And so when you promote one form of education at the expense of all the others, you start to create unintended consequences, the skills gap being one of them. At my foundation, we've tried to make that case consistently and as persuasively as possible. But really, I think the situation now, Brian, is starting to turn, not because I'm incredibly persuasive, but because the headlines are catching up to the themes of my foundation. And the simple data is undeniable. Gen Z, you know, for all the criticism that they take on a daily basis, is actually stepping up. And they're the first generation in 50 years to say, hey, wait a second. Why would I borrow $200,000? Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Right? It's a good question.
And they're seeing on TikTok, people's crying in their cars. I'm 200 grand in debt. I've got a C average from middling college with a liberal arts degree. And I can't get a job. And I think it's an excellent point. You've run an amazing work ethic scholarship program. You've given away millions of dollars in scholarships. So you know, you are your own data point, Mike. What are you seeing?
Well, it's like a tanker turning around in the ocean. It does take time, but we are seeing the turn for sure. I just got our work ethic curriculum after 3 years of pushing this rock up the hill into a big high school in Nevada, in Clark County. 750 kids are going to go through our curriculum. The top 100 will get a full ride scholarship to any trade school in the country. That's important to me right now because I know we can duplicate that. If we can do it in Nevada, we can do it anywhere. And so I'm still out there. I'm still beating my shoe on the table. I'm still saying, look, we can help provide this path. Most importantly, Brian, the kids who are going through that program will become apostles. They'll become emissaries for this, and they're way more persuasive than I could ever hope to be. Finally, $1 million right now at microworks.org for anybody who wants to pursue a career in the trades. We're giving it away this month. Go get some.
Wow. Microworks.com. That's the website.
.org, but com will get you there. You know how it is.
Microworks.org. That is fantastic. By the way, happy to help out in any way that we can as well. Very critical stuff, Micro. We appreciate you coming on and highlighting it. Thank you very much.
Without the PR, without your help, I'm preaching to the choir. I appreciate it.
Tesla, are you there? Mike, thank you. All right. Let's get now to our quicker than the ticker, all the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. United Airlines asking pilots to take unpaid time off next month. The Airline Pilots Union says a delay in Boeing deliveries will lead to fewer flights in the near term for United and could last through the summer. Elon Musk apparently loves the Lone Star State. Tesla's Austin Gigafactory increasing its employee count last year by 86%. The factory is now the largest employer in Austin with more than 22,000 workers. It's an AI first for Yum Brands. The company behind Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, KFC says it is doubling down on its investment in AI-fueled automation. Yum Brands Chief Digital and Tech Officer Joe Park saying in an interview that the company's vision is an AI-first mentality and that the possibility for AI is endless. Google promising to destroy your user data. The move would settle a lawsuit alleging the tech giant secretly tracked users who thought they were browsing the internet privately. Google will now purge the browsing history of millions of Chrome users as a result. All right, coming up, a Make It Mondays that takes us to Mongolia's Gobi Desert and how one entrepreneur is cashing in on locally sourced cashmere.
It's Monday, which also means it's time for Make It Mondays. And tonight we've got the story of a travel adventure turn business opportunity, and it all starts with goats. Take a look.
The most popular product by far for Nautum is the original cashmere sweater. $98, 100% cashmere. I'm Matt Scanlon, 35 years old. My company, Nautum, makes affordable, quality cashmere clothes. We learned a lot about the business of cashmere in a really unique way when we were in Mongolia. This community that we cared about was basically at the bottom of a really long supply chain. Their remoteness meant they couldn't negotiate up the value of the raw material effectively. If we show up and we buy the material from them directly, we could probably pay them a lot more. We kind of concluded that it was about $2.5 million. So we went back to New York and we figured out how to get $2.5 million. The collateral on the loan was my parents' home. They did get paid back and they live in the same house. I drove into the Gobi Desert, Mongolia, $2.5 million in cash. I bought 50 tons of raw cashmere from a community of nomadic herders to launch Nautum. Nautum is a Mongolian word. It's the name of a festival in Mongolia where they have a week or two worth of games that are really traditional to the culture of Mongolia. I'd known that you could buy a cashmere sweater from Ralph Lauren for like $450. But when I looked at what we were doing and how much it cost us to buy raw material, it didn't make sense that it should cost that much. Our fully priced landed cost for a $98 sweater is $37.50. That's what I get it in the United States for. I then have to warehouse, ship, and pack that product. Let's call that another $10 to $15. We do that whole process on our own, or we do it in collaboration with the manufacturer that we're gonna end up making the end product with. That is really the value that we're transferring to the customer. Because we have that access and transparency, we can make them and sell them a better product. Nautum sales in 2022 were over $100 million. Being an entrepreneur is the most humbling experience you can possibly have. Most of the time, it's a roller coaster and it kicks your butt, but when it goes well, it's also the most exciting and incredible journey you'll be on.
And Mr. Mongolia, Matt Scanlon, joins us now. Matt, when we were in Mongolia, what were you doing in Mongolia? Just randomly there?
I still ask myself the same question.
It worked out.
I was going to just travel around Asia. I mean, it was 10 years ago. I was 24 years old. As one does. And we were going to start our backpacking trip in Mongolia and then work our way all the way around to Southeast Asia. And when I got there, I never left. Been there ever since.
Okay. And by the way, I'm not, we don't get like cuts for this. I just think this is cool. We got Snoopy obviously here with a special Peanuts collection as well. This is a challenging business.
Yeah. I mean, it's clothing an inventory business.
Clothing is hard.
I wish someone told me that 10 years ago. But you know, we see it from end to end. So to make it even more challenging, we start at the raw material. So we see it all the way from literally buying cashmere off of a goat to spinning it and knitting our own.
You buy it off the goat. Does the goat know that? Are they hard negotiators?
We tell them. But no, I mean, like we've taken an already difficult business and we've made it even more challenging. And the end result, I think, is something better, something that is more transparent, more affordable, and I think
and quickly,
quality.
You need sustainable because you need the goats to stick around.
Yeah,
you need the goats to continue to goat on, correct?
Of course. We look at it as a very symbiotic relationship. If they're good, the herders are good, the material's good, the customer's happy.
Well, I think they're beautiful. Congratulations on your success. I know you got Woodstock here. You got a little Snoopy action as well, but not just Peanuts. Beautiful stuff. And Matt, congrats on your success. And thanks for coming out and joining us here.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, really, really do appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right. Thanks for watching. I'm back. We're back tomorrow, 7 o'clock. As always, Shark Tank is next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.